Michael McGrath, European Commissioner for Democracy, Justice, the Rule of Law and Consumer Protection. Good morning and welcome to Morning Ireland.
Thank you, Gavin. Good morning.
Your first visit here since you were part of a big EU plan to protect democracy, the Democracy Shield, including protections against interfering in elections. How would this shield prevent AI videos like the one circulating here in the presidential election with Catherine Connolly being seen saying she was going to pull out of the
sure.
election?
Well, first of all, thank you, Gavin, for the opportunity. We approach the first anniversary now of the new European Commission. So what I sought to do in the early weeks and months of my mandate across the different parts of my portfolio was to put initiatives in train, and they are now beginning to come to fruition across rule of law, justice reforms, consumer protection, and in the area of protecting democracy. So we have now published our overall proposal for what is called the European Democracy Shield, which sounds defensive, but really it's about getting on the front foot and ensuring that we do have free and fair elections throughout the European Union at a local, national and at a European level. And fundamentally, the objective is to ensure that every citizen can exercise their democratic entitlement at the ballot box to choose whomever they wish to represent them, to do so in open and fair and transparent elections, free from interference.
How?
So we already have an extensive digital rule book, including the Digital Services Act and the AI Act. And I think the case you highlight immediately before the presidential election here in Ireland is a very good example. The toolbox there was deployed. The Digital Services Coordinator in Ireland, Comisión na Mban, which is the Irish regulator within the Digital Services Act, they took the initiative working with the European Commission. And fundamentally, what is required for deepfake AI videos, which can present a real threat to the integrity of democracy and elections, is that they must be either labelled so that the viewer knows that this is not real, it's AI generated, or they should be taken down. So there are very clear obligations already on
platforms.
But they platforms.
Circulated, and lots more like that could circulate.
It circulated for a time, but action was taken and many more could circulate. And I think it highlights the risks that we now face, and technology has without question changed the game, and that's why we do need to strengthen the toolbox. We will set up this new Centre for Democratic Resilience. President von der Leyen has asked me to lead out on that work. It will be a hub. It will be there to ensure collaboration and cooperation between the member states, the EU institutions, and also different national authorities who are involved in this area. It will be done in full respect of freedom of expression. I think it's important we underline that point. Free speech is a core tenet of our EU values. It's part of our fundamental rights as EU citizens. But where there is systematic attempts at interference, wherever it comes from, whether it be Russia or whether it be from within the European Union, we have to act, because democracy is precious. It should never be taken for granted, and we have to continue to nurture it and invest in it.
Speaking of Russia, Ukraine, is the EU going to accept a peace plan drawn up and based on Russian demands?
No, the EU is an important partner in this process, because this is a war on the continent of Europe that has been waged by Vladimir Putin and Russia. We stand foursquare with Ukraine in the protection of their territorial integrity. Borders should not be changed by force. We continue to see drones and bombs dropping on civilian cities within the territory of Ukraine. And I think we all have to remind ourselves of the origin of this war.
Yes.
It was Russia invaded Ukraine. These are not two parties with equal responsibility for this war. And so we have been involved in recent days, as you know, in Geneva and elsewhere, in discussions with Ukraine, with the United States, with our international partners, because the European Union's role here is vital from a funding point of view, from the point of view of ensuring that our eastern border is secure. Ukraine is the first line of defence for the European Union.
Belgium's objections are stopping Russian assets in their banks being used to fund Ukraine. If those objections aren't overcome, what options does the EU have to fund Ukraine for the next 2 years?
We will have a crucial European Council meeting before Christmas. We will need to come to a decision in the weeks ahead in relation to how the funding requirements for Ukraine are going to be met over the next couple of years, but most urgently for 2026. We have made three proposals. President von der Leyen has written to the leaders of the member states within the European Union, including the idea of this reparations loan that you have referred to, which would be underpinned by the Russian immobilised assets that have been secured within the European Union, principally in Belgium. The Belgian government has raised concerns, has put forward lots of questions. They want to ensure that the burden of this mechanism is fully shared throughout the European Union. I'm confident that we can overcome these issues and that one of the three options will be chosen. It may well be the reparations loan option. The Commission is working on the detail of that proposal with our counterparts throughout the European Union, but it is crucial that the Ukrainian authorities have line of sight of essential funding that they need over the next year or two.
How Ireland became the weak spot in Europe's defences. That's the title of a very long article in the widely read Financial Times this week, scathing of Ireland. Quote, a country that has become a bystander in its own maritime security, and they go on. Worse, it's at risk of becoming an international liability, experts say, one unable to protect the essential infrastructure in its waters, despite having become rich as a host for global tech and trade. In what way are they wrong?
I think the government understands the need for increased investment in defence capability in its various forms. It's not all about hardware. It's about intelligence. It's about radar. It's about scanning
equipment. No
radar,
no sonar.
Well, as you know, the steps are underway. And when I was a member of the government, we had the Commission on the Future of Defence Forces. The government decided on the level of capability. That requires a sustained investment over a period of time. And from my observation, it's clear that the government is committed to that investment
but
level,
what
is stepping
Ireland,
up its capability.
What can and does Ireland do if a suspicious Russian ship enters our waters, short of calling the British?
Well, of course, there are cooperation mechanisms in place. And while Ireland is not part of any military alliance, we do cooperate across a whole range of areas in defence with our European partners. We have PESCO arrangements. We have other operations that Ireland has signed up to and is party to. So there is extensive information sharing,
but
there is also the sharing of capability.
The article goes on to say Ireland's ability to monitor Russian activity is hampered by the fact that it has no dedicated intelligence agency. Security is managed by a branch of an Garda Síochána and a military intelligence department within the Defence Forces. The Defence Ministry declined to comment, they say here. They say the lack of a single agency means the country hasn't developed a security clearance system or above-secret communications mechanisms, making it difficult to trade information with neighbouring countries. The point that they're making is that, albeit that we have good relationships with other countries, but we're unable to share information properly with them. In what way are they wrong?
Well, it goes beyond good relations. We have bilateral agreements. We have cooperation arrangements in place. There is extensive information sharing between the Irish authorities and other European authorities. It is done on the basis of mutual respect, on the basis of long established relationships and agreements that are in place. And so that is why Ireland is part of the family of the European Union, and other member states have more capability for sure in these areas. And there is the willingness that as Ireland increases its investment and develops its own national capability, that it can benefit from the capability that is available elsewhere in the European Union. And I'm satisfied that that is happening.
Separately, do you have any update in relation to the Nitrates Directive, which is being discussed at EU level at the moment?
Well, I want to acknowledge the extensive engagement and cooperation between the Irish authorities and the European Commission on this issue. In the European Commission, we recognise the vital importance of this issue for Irish agriculture. Commissioner Jessica Roswell was here a number of weeks ago, spent quite a bit of time at Minister Hayden, met with all of the stakeholders, and we have now as a Commission proposed to extend the derogation under the Nitrates Directive for Ireland. That's not the final step, but it is a significant step. The text will need to be approved by the Nitrates Committee, which involves the member states of the European Union. If they approve it, and they will consider it in the month of December, then it will fall to the European Commission to formally adopt the decision to extend the nitrates derogation.
So the Commission is going to recommend an extension, yes?
The Commission has recommended an extension of the nitrates derogation for
Ireland.
Will
there be conditions?
The detail of the proposal will be published once it is formally adopted. So it is now with the Nitrates Committee within the European Commission. That involves the member states, so they have to give their consent. They will consider the matter in December, I believe in the second week of December, and then it will go to the Commission to formally adopt the decision. It is a very significant step, and I want to acknowledge the extensive engagement, Minister Hayden, his predecessor, Minister McConnell-Logue, the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, but fundamentally, this is about the substance of protecting water quality in Ireland, and the Irish government has made extensive efforts and is committed to a programme of investment and a programme of reform.
Okay.
And the detail of that will be set out within the decision that hopefully will be formally adopted before Christmas, to give certainty to farmers, to give certainty to agri-producers in Ireland, and that can also meet our environmental obligations and the obligations we have to clean water in Ireland.
EU Commissioner Michael McGrath, thank you very much for coming in to us. 8:32, Karen Carty has the news.